You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 30 July. We get a first look at U.S. second quarter GDP. 2:30 this afternoon, our time. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Dylan Bradfield, he's a portfolio manager at ShareNet. Strong Volterra results, but of course those PGM prices peaked back in January, but the numbers are staggering. And a quick thought on the FOMC decision, rate unchanged, and they promised to fight inflation, but the US 10-year saying that doesn't quite believe it. Andreas Slabber from Trade Intelligence, insights into the local liquor retail market, 109 billion rand industry. And then we're going to chat with Creation Capital. They've launched a hybrid debt fund that looks to expand funding for the missing mid-corporate market. Importantly, that fund is listed on Cape Town Stock Exchange. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Too soon for FlySaf Air to make the call on ticket surcharge. Commits to removing it, but warns that jet fuel prices are unlikely to return to pre-war levels. Business Day, Standard Bank and Pepco open exploratory talks over personal banking tie-up. Morning markets, US red, very red. S&P down 1.5%, NASDAQ off 2.1%. Over in the east, it's mostly green, although Sydney's down 0.2%. Tokyo up 1.3%, Hong Kong down 0.25%, and Tencent up 0.1%. Commodities mixed. On the green, we've got gold futures, 4,111, Brent, 89.34, and on the red, platinum, 1,600, palladium, 1,255. Rand, 16.67, Bitcoin, 64,100. Top 40 opening call, 360 points to the up, green, 0.3% higher.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Dylan Bradfield. He is a portfolio manager at ShareNet. Dylan, appreciate the early morning, the Volterra results 6 months to ending June. As I said in the intro there, I mean, back in June, we had platinum 2,800, palladium 2,200. That really helped them. What we saw was staggering numbers. HEPS plus 1,634%. Dividend up 2,750%. The challenge, of course, is PGM prices are lower. So what does the second half look? Your thoughts on the numbers, your thoughts on whether it's worth holding at these price points.
Yes, morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. First off, exceptional results.
Yeah.
Really, really good. We really proved the capital allocation that management have come through. We saw the payout ratio surge from 40% to 70%. So when the iron is hot and the free cash flow moves up, the amount of money that these companies make is phenomenal. It was interesting to also see we've moved from the negative debt position to plus cash position. So there's about 23 billion net cash on the balance sheets. Fantastic to see. It means they've held a little bit back for future dividends. We have noted, obviously, the basket price has come down around about 30-35%. And seemingly, we've seen the share price also move down from the highs, about 38%. So going forward, it all depends where the basket price is. What we're all looking for is the cost discipline that will come through. They have guided that it will be flat, so that's quite encouraging. But across the board, if you look through the free cash flow, the EBITDA, the revenue, and the earnings, it looked like a fantastic beat.
It absolutely was. And I take your point. I mean, the price of the PGM, they're a price taker. They get what they can. But if we look through to it, you mentioned, for example, costs coming in flat. It's the old story of what they can manage. Management is managing very, very well.
Yeah. Well, we think with their best of breed, they are the lowest cost operator across the curve for the big miners. And just to note, they are one of the deeper mines that you are looking to they manage. Northern's obviously the more flatter mine operation. So, yeah, we think best of breed. We stick with the name and we'll probably be holding it through the cycle. Mm-hmm. We'll look for catalysts, as you mentioned, from the Fed, from our own MPCs down the line, just to see how the rates decision starts to taper or to adjust accordingly. But we still think it's a good entry point. We were buying into the results a couple of days ago. We had expected the prices to pull back, but just noting the good cost discipline, the really clean set of cash flow movements still holding the stock. Yeah.
So let's move to news overnight. We had the FOMC Fed decision. This is the second one with the new chair. No change. That market, I think, was expecting that. In the press conference, a promise by the chair to keep a lid on inflation. I got to say, I'm not sure the market was convinced by that, because I saw the U.S. 10-year moving higher, 4.708%. The market seems to think, maybe not. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. He's fighting two battles here. One is to try and keep the version of his inflation down, and the other one is he has a president looking to continue antics which are ultimately inflationary. We've had a notice of mention of tariffs in the background there, notice of other moving or spiked inputs along the way, obviously talking about oil. I think the idea of trying to create the price stability and trying to convince, the inflation has been running about 54 months ahead of its inflation target. So the market's not buying into the words just yet. It feels like at some point they'll have to do the hike, get in front of the curve. But for now, as you saw in the first response to the market, rallied up, cold rallied, and then afterwards words changed the narrative a bit. The dissent as well from three of the voting members didn't help. And I think we got some reality shocks coming through. We'll just have to wait when they decide to do it.
Yeah, and to be clear, plus 5 years, not in that 2% target. We'll leave it there. It's Dylan Bradfield, Portfolio Manager, Shenet. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. What do you think about the Fed and their ability to fight the inflation? Will they eventually get it back to that 2%? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrea Slabber, Insights Lead at Trade Intelligence. Andrea, appreciate the time. Recent research from yourselves and your colleagues at Trade Intelligence looking at the local liquor market. And I think I must stress it's off trade. So as I understand, this is bottle store online. This is not bars and restaurants. But we saw growth, 4.2%, $109 billion in total. Modest growth, but not bad growth, considering, I would argue, consumers got poorer and discretionary spending probably slowed over the period.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen the spend around liquor products being quite protected over the past two or three decades, where economic pressures have intensified. Mm-hmm. We still see that, but I think a big factor that has curbed growth over the past few months in particular, over the past year, I would say, is the steep rise in online gambling. I mean, in 2024, South African spend on online gambling increased by 40%, or shall I say surged. Then last year, a further 23% rise on that. So even the liquor industry is being impacted by the severe pressures on household income and disposable income in particular.
Yeah, I get your point. I hadn't thought of that, of course. Absolutely. There's a finite wallet to go around. And if a lot of it is going into gambling, it's got to give somewhere else. If we look at the industry, corporate liquor footprint, and I see it. I mean, we had a Boxer update earlier in the week. I think they're growing their liquor outlets at kind of twice the pace that they're growing their traditional grocery outlets. But corporate liquor footprint really is a big part of the story in terms of retail these days.
Absolutely. I mean, the big trend that we're seeing in FMCG retail from the big grocery retail groups is expanding the footprint of your adjacent categories, liquor being one of them, health and beauty, pet, baby, etc. And the one thing that all of those adjacent sort of categories or channels have in common is they do give a bit of a higher margin benefit. So I can understand that the retail groups are definitely intensifying their competition, particularly around liquor.
And is there a risk of cannibalization? I'm thinking, so I live in Rosebank, and, you know, in the olden days, I imagine there would have been maybe one or two, probably one liquor outlet in the mall where I'm at. But now I've got all of the big retailers. They've all got the liquor stores, some standalone, some in store. We're seeing a bit of cannibalization, surely.
It's not showing in the numbers just yet, but we are starting to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So in certain regions, particularly in Gauteng, where store expansion has really intensified, we don't have stats in terms of turnover impact, but certainly from in-store observations, reduced foot traffic, particularly in those high-density areas where we are really spoiled for choice around every corner.
Yeah, it is. It's that spoiled for choice literally around every corner in some cases. And the future also, I mean, aside from the corporate space, which is absolutely gobbling it up, but the other is online. But online, fascinatingly, is apps. That makes sense. But it's not standalone liquor apps. It's the grocery apps. It is probably 60-60 who are the dominant player here.
Definitely the dominant player. If you consider the luxury of the convenience, especially with a, if you consider a subscription model where 99 Rand fees already paid, many people report that they really prefer to buy their liquor products when they do their grocery shopping as well. And online deliveries obviously enable that.
Does it make harder for the liquor brand? Because I'm thinking, if I walk into a good old, you know, like a liquor store, there can be promotions that can catch my attention. I'm walking down a corridor, whatever the case may be, between the shelving. It's a different experience than an app. The brand really has to sort of get in with the 60-60, whoever it might be, to push the innovation and the product releases.
Definitely. But the interesting thing is, over the past year or two, you would have seen, if we talk about the dominant player being the liquor shops within the ShopRite stable, mm-hmm. particularly Checkers, you will notice that the in-store opportunities for promotional displays, etc., have reduced from what we've seen many years ago with lots of freestanding units and posters and displays, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And they do align the online, shall I say, advertising or promotional messaging with what's happening in-store.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting harder and harder for brands to shout out louder and louder than the others.
And that's a great point. I hadn't thought of it. You mentioned it. Yeah, there is perhaps less happening in the store because it's also happening on the apps. Taverns, 8% up. That overall growth was 4.2. So taverns twice the overall growth. Is this a market trading down? Is this convenience? Or is it better measuring a space that was perhaps less measurable in previous periods?
It's definitely a combination of all of those. But mm-hmm. a big driving factor is transport costs and the proximity benefit of the taverns. That is definitely driving growth. And also there's huge excitement around what's happening in the informal trade and around taverns, excitement around events, influencers playing a big role. So there's definitely also a rise in excitement around how liquor is consumed in taverns.
And a line from your report that's going to stick with me forever: cold or they walk out. I love it. But it's around execution is often more than maybe branding and advertising. It's about the experience so very much. And that ties to what you were saying a moment ago.
Definitely. I mean, a big challenge for an independent liquor retailer or tavern owner is cold space and having, obviously, making sure that electricity is running and the drinks are kept cold. So I think there's definitely intensified competition in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not cold, people will find a place where they'll find a cold one.
Yeah. It, again, it never thought to me the impact that the load shedding past, it's in the past, but that impact it was having on so many different sectors. We leave it there. It's Andrea Slabber, Insights Lead, Trade Intelligence. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Kashif Isaacs. He's a Creation Capital CEO. Kashif, appreciate the early morning. You've recently launched a hybrid debt fund to expand funding for the missing mid-corporate market. It is a listed note structure in the Cape Town Stock Exchange. Let's quickly talk through around that missing mid-corporate market. I'm imagining this is sort of more the SME space rather than the big traditional corporates that you're looking at.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, absolutely. So I'll bring it to life, but just sharing a quick few relevant statistics with you. SMEs employ about 60% of South Africa's labor force.
Yeah.
90% of all registered business are SMEs,
mm-hmm.
and they contribute between 35% and 40% to our GDP. yet those businesses are struggling to raise capital. The funding gap has been estimated at about 350 billion rand per year. And that is the area this fund is focusing on. We don't necessarily lend directly to the SMEs. We lend capital to intermediaries who are specialists in the SME space, specialists in particular sectors. And through that, we're then able to reach a higher number of SMEs than if we were lending directly to the SMEs.
I get you. And perhaps that's the really, really clever part here, because, you know, the traditional bank looks at an SME and it's too small for them. They don't have the expertise in the various different spaces. You put those specialists bang in the important part so that they can engage directly with that SME. You source the capital, you get the specialist, and then you can get the money flowing.
Absolutely. So you know, by focusing on the aggregators, we tap into their expertise. We very carefully assess, you know, how they've performed historically. Mm-hmm. What was their ratio of non-performing loans? You know, do they have independence on the credit committee? Mm-hmm. A rigorous credit process. You know, before we capitalize their businesses. But the ability to amplify the capital, the reach of the capital that institutional investors place with us, you know, I think that is the magic in the middle.
And then the other part of the magic is this is a debt fund, as I said, and it is listed on Cape Town Stock Exchange. So that then gives access to other third parties. And I'm thinking, I mean, it could be me or a listener. It could also potentially be a pension fund who can now access an area of the market they could probably never get to before.
Absolutely. So we are positioning this product as semi-liquid mm-hmm. because the note in itself is tradable. Right. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the note issuer will invest into the private credit strategy underlying, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but the note itself is tradable. So as the note scales, as we have more investors coming in, if you need liquidity as an institutional investor, you are first and foremost able to say, let me try and sell the mm-hmm. note as opposed to looking towards the underlying fund for liquidity. Because the reality is the underlying fund will still be holding largely illiquid investments. Yes, our horizon is slightly shorter, so we look to lend the money out for a period of 3 to 5 years maximum. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's not as long dated as a private equity strategy. But you know, short-term liquidity at fund level, it's still something we're working on. But we are saying, you know, the note is also aimed at the fixed income sector. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at the terms of the note, we've kept it as vanilla as possible, so that it is as close as we could get it to a normal corporate bond, you know, bank bond. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we think it will appeal to the fixed income manager space as well. And the other benefit for them, you know, over and above the returns, it's also a way for that market to access tangible impact with the capital that they manage on behalf of clients. It's something that's also very difficult for them to access.
I hadn't actually thought of that. Of course, there is the impact side of it as well. And that liquidity, hugely important. You say semi-liquid, but a lot more liquid than would normally be if they were lending directly to SMEs. That listing instrument does give them some ability there. We'll leave it there. Scott Chief Isaacs, Creation Capital CEO. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Sean Kelly. You find him, of course, at Parity Wealth. We're talking about global fragmentation, geopolitical risks, tariffs, all of those bits, and how we need to perhaps rethink our portfolios and how we position them to catch these trends. We asked if you were doing just that in terms of repositioning portfolios. Just over 40% said, yep, but you know what? Slowly in places. A third said, no, really good, same as always. The rest, yes, you are already and waiting. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchli, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Offshore trusts.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.